WRIR Studios, we bring you The Defenders Live with our very own guest, Miss Anna Edwards. Let's hear what Miss Anna has to say. So, Anna, take it away.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now.
And good afternoon, Richmond. You are listening to The Defenders Live, and I am your host, Anna Edwards, and today is Monday. The Defenders is brought to you as a production of The Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality, and you can learn more at defendersfje.org. You can give us a call at 644-5834, and you can send us an email at defendersfje@hotmail.com. In addition, we have a blog, defendersfje.blogspot.com. Well, we are back, and with me again today is my new co-host, Tiamba Wilkerson, who's also a member of the Defenders. So, Tiamba, say hi.
Good afternoon, Richmond.
We've decided to team up for a little bit and see how this goes. I think it was I think it worked really well last week.
And I guess.
Yeah, it did. I got phone calls. It went well.
Okay, that's good.
That's right. What I thought we would do today is talk a little bit more, not about the VPA, the Virginia People's Assembly, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. about one of the issues, one of the many, many issues that was raised at the VPA, and that is prison reform issues, the criminal justice system and incarceration. Offenders, ex-offenders, the whole range of issues that have come up that either the defenders have been involved in or have supported the work of other folks. One of the major representatives for that issue in the city of Richmond, and to a large extent, I think, with a nice network of people around the state, is Lily Branch Kennedy, who formed an organization called Resource Information Help for the Disadvantaged. And she's a powerful advocate for the rights of prisoners and ex-prisoners. And she talked about an entire slate of legislation during the VPA that is before the General Assembly this year. And I think you read off some of the legislation last week, so people have sort of had an introduction mm-hmm. To what some of those are. Could you go ahead and do that again, just the titles, I think?
Sure. The first was the Earned Second Chance, which basically allowed prisoners to reduce their sentence through hard work and education and things of that nature, mm-hmm. allowing them to earn credits towards their release.
Right.
The next was Ban the Box, which would remove the "Are you a felon? Do you have any misdemeanor box?" from employment applications. The next was the Restoration of Civil Rights, which would advocate for the automatic restoration of voting rights after their sentence was complete.
Mm-hmm.
The next was to opt out of all bans on drug offenders, which would allow people who have drug offenses to become eligible for TANF benefits.
Right, right.
And the next, the final, is Protecting Our Children, which would keep minors in the juvenile justice system of the adult system.
Right, right, yeah. So no more putting children through trials as adults.
Right,
yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. So it's a powerful slate of legislation, and the website for RAHD for more information about the work that they have done and continue to do and are looking for support for is www.rihd.org. There's also an affiliation with a project called Thousand Kites, and it's got a component that's a campaign that I think is restoration It's a restoration of voter rights campaign. So that's mm-hmm. one. I know that's one that Lily has worked on a lot over this last year or so. She participates in it. And from their website, which is thousandkites.org, it refers to itself as a national dialogue project addressing the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. And it's a way that, you know, a local project can be connected to a national project and, mm-hmm. and have, you know, impact in both directions. But I think this group supports cultural projects also that bring attention to those issues. And anyway, it looks like a very interesting site, and she's talked about it a lot over the last year. One of the other reasons to bring us up, and I kind of like us to delve a little bit into some of these pieces of legislation a little bit more, is the fact that in the city of Richmond, of course, we have talked about the problems with our Richmond City Jail mm-hmm. For a long time. In fact, the Defenders, in essence, was created on that issue
right.
back in 2002. Yeah. So how long have you been,
since
around?
Since 04.
Since 04, yeah. And that's right. And what brought you on?
Actually, the burial ground.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
and just right. in general, wanting to do more work.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Wanting to do work.
And I think that was, I'm trying to think, 2004 in relation to the city jail, we had been focused on pointing out a lot of the abuses in the statewide system.
Mm-hmm.
But our own Richmond City Jail was really quite a piece of work in those days. I mean, mm-hmm. it's still got major issues, but I think to a large extent, people feel like there's a sheriff in place now that is really trying to address those concerns.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas back in 2002, 2003, you know, I think everybody remembers the Style Weekly article that was a profile of then Sheriff Michelle Mitchell. And it was fascinating, that article, because it seemed very much focused on her as a lovely woman personality in the jail, as opposed to really being focused on the issues
right.
and the real problems in the jail.
Right.
And of course,
I'm sure she was a lovely woman in person.
You know,
aside from that, issue.
All the yes. photographs went right there. And so that was what was sort of interesting, you know, about it, was that, you know, it was focused on what she was wearing as opposed to, you know, as
okay.
she gave tours through the jail and things like that. And, you know, and on the one hand, that's something, you know, you get angry when you see that women, people mm-hmm. focus on what they look like in
yeah,
their jobs
right.
as opposed to what they're doing
actually
in their jobs.
Right.
And in this case, I think, though, that the problems with the city jail were such and had been such for so long
mm-hmm.
that it almost didn't matter, because we were all much more concerned about why those problems, you know, were not being dealt with. And some of them were literally corruption
right
there in the sheriff's office, and lots of abuse of power. And then, you know, finally to have a jail with locks that don't work.
Right.
It was so mind-boggling that, you know, mm-hmm. that was the death knell for that particular administration.
And yeah.
So when Sheriff Woody came in, the turnover was remarkable. Very quickly,
mm-hmm.
And of course, that then evolved into this whole nepotism issue,
right?
came up
right.
More recently, so,
right.
The rationale I think at the beginning was that he needed to clean house and bring in people he could trust,
right?
And I think a lot of people could understand that based on what had been going on,
mm-hmm.
But then I guess it just sort of got a little out of control,
out of hand, right?
Yeah, right. But more to the point. Is the fact that the city of Richmond is apparently getting a new city jail.
Yes. Broke ground last week,
yeah.
over the weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
There's a nice thank you card on the sheriff's website at richmondgov.org /sheriff/, I think that's it, /sheriff. You go there is a nice, lovely calligraphically written card that says mm-hmm. thank you to the mayor's office for helping to push that through. And of course that went through its own controversy mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, proposals and bids and
right.
all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what we hope is that, of course, this is a new building with a new philosophy attached to it. The old building was more than 40 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, more than, it was almost at 200% capacity, I think.
Wow.
And mm-hmm. so, you know, it was known for, you know, not having air conditioning in the summer and certainly, mm-hmm. you know, in the biggest lockup area. And that even in the women's section of the jail, I'm not sure. I think they did have air conditioning in the summer, but, you know, it was
shoddy.
Yeah. But those all go to issues of health. You know, we were talking about what are the challenges for people who end up in city jail and stay in city jail.
Mm-hmm.
So city jails are supposed to be temporary lockup, right? But you have people who have been serving years in, mm-hmm. in the city jail, and their sentences, you know, sometimes not being appropriate. And so a couple of these pieces of legislation, I think, also lend themselves to that. And one of them is, as you say, keeping children out of the adult system.
Right.
And then in relation to drug offenses, there have been attempts to create kind of drug courts that
mm-hmm.
redirect people from jail
into rehab programs.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the other ones is, I think, a mental health court.
Okay.
Yeah, because they're, you know, I think Phil Willato, who's editor of the Virginia Defender, wrote for another newspaper, and I apologize that I can't remember the name of it right now. But it did a series on mental health in the city jail. And one of the statistics that came out was that almost 50%, I want to say it was somewhere in the 40 to 45% of the inmates in that jail were there for crimes committed in relation to mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, minor things like vagrancy,
mm-hmm.
you know, trespassing, loitering, and
mm-hmm.
things like that that were related more to mental health issues than they
mm-hmm.
were to, you know, to any real, you know, threat to society
mm-hmm.
kinds of crimes. And so the need for improved mental health treatment.
Yeah, for all inmates.
Yeah.
You know, not just those with a specific diagnosis.
Right.
But just inmates in general. And that's actually interesting. I had a conversation with a friend of mine who actually does prison abolition work. And she's more focused on reform, you know, transformative and... what's the other word I'm looking for? Transformative. And,
rehabilitative.
There's another word.
An official term.
Just transformative
yeah.
justice. There's another word for it. I can't think of it right now.
Yeah.
But it just talks about, particularly in communities of color, just the overall general healing that needs to take place in communities that deal with oppression and how crimes are a result of neglect, oppression, and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I just recently had that discussion with
yeah.
someone, you know, I told him, I was like, I'm still learning about prison abolition. I don't know if I'm there yet, but it's definitely
right.
something that I'm willing to discuss,
yeah.
you know, and I mean, she definitely has a point,
yeah.
you know, that all inmates should be going through that healing process, particularly inmates of color.
Right. That is very interesting because it does come up, this issue of abolishing jails and
right.
abolishing prisons, you know, and there's...
And Angela Davis is, you know, a big advocate of...
Yeah.
She actually probably started the movement of prison abolition.
Yeah, she was one of the big minds, I think, around
yeah.
The issue of the prison industrial complex.
Complex, yeah.
You know?
She didn't
yeah.
she pen, didn't she...
She may
created?
Have coined that term.
Yeah.
It could be.
She
yes.
did.
Yeah. I actually have to confess that I have not read as much Angela Davis as I should have to this point.
You aren't alone. I've read articles, and I did read Women, Race, and Class, but I know there's much more. There are a lot of things that I haven't read.
Right, I probably should,
yeah, you know, but yeah. there's time.
Yeah. You know, and another person that I did start to read was Bell Hooks.
Right.
And she's a powerful writer, especially if you know, at the time when people are reading Betty Friedan,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the the women and feminist movement, you know, it's essentially the white women's feminist movement.
Right.
And then you have bell hooks trying to go to school, sort of right in the shadows of that and trying to find the experience of black women
right.
and immigrant women, you know, in that experience
mm-hmm.
and drawing attention to, you know, where the disconnect was, that
mm-hmm.
those issues were certainly valid, but there was this whole
other set of issues.
This whole other
women
set
of color,
issues.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Women of color, like you said, immigrant women, mm-hmm. women with disabilities.
And it was class.
Yeah, right.
Right. There you go.
Right.
Well, that's my cue to let you know that you are listening to Defenders Live here on WRIR 97.3. It's Richmond's radio for the rest of us, Richmond's independent radio here. And coming to you live, Defenders is brought to you by the Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality. You can learn more at defendersfje.org. Phone 804-644-5834 and email defendersfje@hotmail.com. And I want to thank my engineer, Emma, today for doing such a fabulous job.
Yes, thank you, Emma.
Yeah. Class and jails.
Oh, wow. That's an hour radio program. I mean, it's just, you know, the history is there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's mm-hmm. debtor's prison and, you know, just all
Good
kinds
point.
Of, you know.
Yeah.
Class and prison.
There you go.
You know, and then you throw race in there and
yeah.
There's just, yeah.
I'm so glad you said that, debtor's prison, because I remember I was thinking the other day, all the people who are in debt and the level to which they're in debt now.
The
prisons would be a lot bigger.
Exactly. I actually just said that exact same thing to someone else the other day. I'm like, thank God there are no debtor jails, because I would be serving a life sentence right now. It would be scary, and it just,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Exactly. So, to that same issue, we could talk about the fact that it could be that people are in jail in part because of debt.
Right.
In part because of the lack of jobs.
Right.
And we can trace that back to, I mean, not literally trace it back, but mm-hmm. in terms of connecting, you know, the issues, you know, run that right on back to the state of the economy right now.
Mm-hmm.
The occupation movement,
mm-hmm.
the fact that I've heard lots and lots of people say, maybe it's just time to rob a bank because nothing else is working.
It's that real, yeah.
You know, so poverty, you know, can produce crime and often does.
It does.
But it doesn't mean, you know, you're not supposed to extrapolate in every direction. Just like, you know, every man that I see wearing a white shirt, you know, with a white collar and a tie is not a white collar criminal. You know,
right.
If I'm not going to make that extrapolation, then we should not make the other extrapolations.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. But you do see that happening, where poor communities are over-policed. And actually, that speaks a lot to Michelle Alexander's work.
Mm-hmm.
The New Jim Crow, I think, is the title of her book. She was actually here in Richmond a few months ago and gave a really good talk.
Did you see it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was there, and I still haven't read the book, but it's on my to-do list, definitely. But talking about how, you know, the over-policing in communities of color particularly have had, a devastating effect on the community.
Right.
Particularly in relation to African-American men. And now even, you know, today there's definitely mm-hmm. an increase in the women prisoner population, and that's becoming a big issue because
mm-hmm.
that is on the rise as well.
I was listening to, I don't remember exactly what program. I think I was listening to WRIR. And I think it was yesterday, and I was driving around, and I caught an excerpt of an interview with somebody who was talking about people who are on food stamps, or, you know, what we call SNAP benefits now.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about the fact that there's such a focus on, when we talk about poverty and we talk about crime and we talk about policing and we talk about mm-hmm. that, and the focus is always on African-American people, you know, black males
mm-hmm.
and that
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. And it occurs to me that we do these reports and we talk about this issue, and then somewhere in there's like a footnote that says, yeah, but, you know, the greater number of poor people and the greater number of people who are in jail are white, are poor whites who are in jail,
mm-hmm.
right? And it occurs to me that there's an invisibility that population is actually experiencing, because politically they get, really, he was talking about Newt Gingrich constantly using the Black community in that way. It's like when mm-hmm. he talks about poverty, he talks about Black people. When he talks about crime, mm-hmm. he talks about Black people. So he's colorizing mm-hmm. those issues mm-hmm. to be represented by Black people. So exactly. that finally, you know, you see somebody Black and you think crime and poverty. Mm-hmm. And what that's doing is rendering another layer of an oppressed population, which is poor white, talking about mm-hmm. class, invisible mm-hmm. in these conversations and mm-hmm. you know in the issues. And I think that that's, you know, that's one of those, again, classic devices for right. dividing populations dividing. Who mm-hmm. actually have more in common than they do not have in common.
Yeah, I mean that's a good point, and I hadn't thought about that. I think a lot of you know, maybe the reason why people bring up race and prison issues, because I guess in terms of our percentage of the population, how, you know, right. in terms of the proportions, exactly,
right.
that in that way we're definitely, you know, mm-hmm. disproportionately affected by it.
Right.
And right. you know, kind of like you said, the fact that crime and prison and who is criminal and who's not,
mm-hmm.
that the poor white prisoners don't really represent their entire community in the same way that prisoners of color do.
That's right. Boy, it's a lot of...
I know. It's a big onion with a lot of layers.
Yeah. That's it. It made me think, too, of the, you know, when you... last year there was... Now, I'm not going to remember the details of it, but it mm-hmm. sort of goes back to the issue, too, of children who are accused of crimes, or, you know, a lot of there'll be little stories that come up in YouTube and, you know, or that will sort of circulate kind of under the mm-hmm. radar, but not quite, that are about children who commit crimes or, right. you know, accidental or, you know, intentional, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and that sort of horror that's involved in that. And the what happens when you show, say, a 14-year-old, you know, Black boy and right. a 14-year-old white boy right. and how one picture elicits sympathy and the other picture elicits fear right. and right. they're children.
Right.
You know?
Well, I mean, yeah, and it's even even at younger ages now, and the
don't get me started on homeless shelters and the,
right.
the rules about how old boys can be in order to stay exactly. with their mothers in a shelter.
And just it makes me, that point makes me think of the case, I don't know if you remember, it's been about 5 or 6 years, of the, down in Florida, the little 5-year-old kindergarten girl who was handcuffed yes. for having a tantrum in school. And then it just, you know,
yes.
children of color are always criminals.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know.
It's like that's
never
the first thing.
Never in need of help, never having situations where they can't cope, they don't have the skills to deal with it,
right.
they don't have the tools to deal with it. I right. mean, they're children,
right.
you know, yeah. and
it goes to the media piece of it as well, because right. you know, I work in the social services arena, and you know, I know you study mm-hmm. in that arena, and we know that there's a lot of programming out there, and we know that there's a lot of work being done. We know that, you know, I think our kids are sometimes sort of swamped by social services language, you
right.
know, in their daily lives and stuff, and yet the media is where you get the representation, the continuation of these sort of stereotypical things. It's like the media has picked that story about that girl got handcuffed.
Right.
Now,
right.
that's a horror story. Mm-hmm. And so that deserved the media recognition in order to point that out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there are other instances where, you know, it's the issues that are put before the public are,
right.
are you know, selectively identified, because they know that on a gut level people are going to react. In
That's
one way
true.
Or the other, and it's just going to be exploited in that way.
Right. And there are ways more, you know, subtle or not as significant ways in which our children have to deal with that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, I would like to remind people of a couple of the websites that we have talked about today. Of course, one was the sheriff's website here in the city of Richmond, which is richmondgov.com. /sheriff, S-H-E-R-I-F-F, in case you were wondering whether it was two R's or one. RIHD.org for resource information, help for the disadvantaged, with more information about the slate of legislation that is before the General Assembly regarding prison reform. ThousandKites.org, which is the national dialogue project for prison reform and the criminal justice system. And I'm sure there's more that we could give you. Also, there's actually a note on their website about the book, The New Jim Crow. Mm-hmm. And so that's another resource for people, Michelle Alexander's. Mm-hmm. Michelle Alexander's book. One of our members, Kwame Binta, is mm-hmm. Also a member of the UNIA ACL mm-hmm. and the November Coalition, and he talks a lot about that book as well. Mm-hmm.
There's also another book, I can't remember the author's name, but mm-hmm. it's called Slavery by Another Name, and it actually talks about the use of prison mm-hmm. labor directly following emancipation and, you know.
Right.
Kind of pushing, you know, formerly enslaved African Americans into the prison system because, right. you know, after slavery, so many, you know, now
they lost the labor force.
Exactly, exactly. And prison was a good way to get that cheap labor back.
Yeah. Well,
free labor.
The Legend of John Henry. Hold that thought for next time. And I would like to thank you, Tiamba, for joining me again this week.
You're welcome.
And looking forward to doing this more. And I want to thank Richmonders for tuning in to the Defenders Live today. Again, try to follow this legislation. There are lobby days coming up, and I'm sorry I don't have the date for that, but if you Google that, I think you will find there are opportunities for you to pitch in and lend your support to the issues that you deem important, and this is certainly a slate of them that are good. Mm-hmm. Thanks for tuning in to Defenders Live. We will be with you again next week. Remember that kindness matters in this struggle and that we are all in this struggle together. So we will talk to you next week. Thanks.
Bye.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now.
All right, you're listening to WRILP, 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, radio for the rest of us. That was Miss Anna Edwards with the Defenders Live.